Going Linux, episode 188, Using Virtual Machines, an Introduction. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your chief executive minion, Bill. Unfortunately, Tom had some internet issues and couldn't join us today.
Whether you are new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
We hope that you find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
In today's episode, using virtual machines. Well, Time Warner's not being kind to Tom again this time.
I don't know. What is Time Warner's problem? I know it's got to be he must have made someone mad.
I don't know. But we, just for our listeners, we tried to do the recording with Tom, and we just couldn't hear what he was saying. I'm sure on his end it was being recorded just fine, but to have a conversation kind of requires that you're able to hear what the other person's saying.
Yeah, well, we hope that Time Warner gets his internet fixed soon, because we miss having Tom here.
Yeah, we need him here. Tom, hurry back. Time Warner, get your act together.
Yeah, or we're going to send a Linux hit team after you.
Yeah.
So, Larry, how's your week been going?
Good week. Hey, I hear yours has been going really well. You've got a new machine.
I do.
Tell us about it.
Ooh, it's called an Asus G75VW. It's a gaming laptop. It has a Core i7 processor, 8 gigs of RAM, terabyte drive, NVIDIA graphics, and after much hemming and hauling and stuff, I finally picked it up. It was not too bad. It's really powerful. You're going from a dual core machine to a quad core with hyper threading. It's vastly different, but it's just so fast. And yes, it does work with Linux just fine. I just installed about 2 days ago Ubuntu. I have a dual boot system, and man, is it fast. Wow.
I you shared the specs with me, and this thing, as you described it, is a beast. Although it's a laptop, it weighs more than most newborn babies. This thing is...
It is a baby.
It is. It's big, and it looks powerful. It really does.
Yeah. I wanted a nice, I will say the Intel just makes incredible technology, and their i7 chip is just insanely powerful. And one of the reasons I wanted to go with the i7 was, I'm playing with a lot of virtual machines now, and where I could do it on a dual core, you know, it's nice to have multiple cores and more than 4 gigs of RAM. So, you know, for this episode, it really come in handy.
Yeah. So you can be running a whole different virtual machine and compiling an operating system over there while you're recording this on the native hardware, right?
Actually, I could be running two or three virtual machines and recording and encoding a video, but I'm not bragging. No, it's a wonderful machine, and everybody says, "Why'd you get a gaming laptop?" Well, they're built with more of the high end components, and because I really wanted to start playing with a lot of virtual machines, and because it's just virtual machines are becoming such a huge thing. I mean, look at what's going on. You know, everybody's saying, you know, move it to the cloud. You know, you can host, people are hosting Windows and other Linux operating systems and stuff on BSD and on Linux machines, because they say it's just so, you know, you can, the chips are so powerful now that they can do multiple things. So the virtualization technology's just exploded. and it seems getting better and better. I remember the first time I tried it, oh man, I had a hard time. It just keeps getting easier and easier.
So why Asus? Why not something from System 76 or from ZA Reason or one of the Linux computer suppliers?
I really tried to find something from those guys, even if it was more expensive. I had told myself if they have what I want, I would pay more money for it. Yep. Just because I want to support them. But unfortunately, I did not want integrated graphics. I wanted a discrete or dedicated graphics for my machine. Mm-hmm. Not only I think it runs better, I don't want to share memory with my video card. And I just personally, where our integrated graphics are getting better, they just not up to what you just have a dedicated video card. And they make good stuff, but I was, System 76, but, you know, when you really tried to get some different components installed, or it was kind of, I don't know how they build their machines, but they really couldn't customize it the way I wanted it. So in the long run, where they make great machines, I'm sure, they just couldn't give me the specs I wanted on my machine.
Okay.
And same with ZA Reason. They make great machines, but if you try to go outside of what they, their main line, it's kind of hard. And I wanted something that would do exactly what I needed. And so I wanted to give it, I wanted to give this virtualization when I'm playing with the best chance to succeed and be an enjoyable experience.
Yeah. Well, and, to be fair to ZA Reason and System 76, they are on the smaller side of computer manufacturers and computer distributors, and certainly don't have the ability, I'm sure, to be as flexible as a Dell or an Asus or an HP on what they can configure for you. So, no bad reflection on them. They make very good machines. And, when I'm in the market for another machine, that's the first place I'll look. And I'm hoping that will be where I end up with one of those two vendors. And my needs are a little simpler than yours. So I think I don't need as much customization. And I think they have lots of different models. And for most people, I think what they have would work just fine. And certainly you've got the guarantee that the hardware is going to work with whatever Linux you put on there. So
yeah,
that's one of the reasons I want to go with them, not only to support them, but just because I'm tired of having to mess around with the hardware to get it to work. Even if it's just one component.
Yeah.
I'd like things to just work for a change.
Well, I understand it. And like I said, I like System 76 a lot. I think they're a great company. I talked to one of them on the phone, and they were very helpful. But like I said, there are smaller vendors compared to the Dells and Asus's and Apples and everything. They do a good job. And like I said, if I wasn't just so picky about what I wanted in the machine, I'm sure that machine, they could build me one just fine. But I like to put my machines to, I like to really push them sometimes. And in all fairness, they have great quality, but I'm not a fan of the integrated graphics right now. I've had some problems with it in the past. And I bet you, if you're just looking for a good machine, you just don't, and you want it to make sure it works with Linux, those two guys, ZA Reason and System 76, can make just actually high quality machines. And I know the warranty is pretty good. I've heard a lot of people say that they really stand behind their products.
Yep, it's the support that helps make them what they are. And that's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
So you didn't have any problem with UEFI on the booting or anything like that to get it to configure properly?
I did not. I didn't have any problems.
Okay, good, good. Because from the feedback we've been getting in our listener feedback, I've seen some emails from people who are having some things that I'm thinking might be UEFI related, but Maybe not. Certainly not the UEFI issues that will come with the Windows 8 machines, but it's starting to creep in a little bit, especially on the lower powered machines, especially the ones from Acer that are netbooks. You know, they they have a kind of a weird booting process anyway. So anyway, it sounds like the machine you have, Bill, is particularly well suited for our topic today, which is virtual machines.
And that leads us into to the question, what is a virtual machine? So let's get some definitions out of the way. A virtual machine lets you run one operating system inside another. And the definitions are your host OS. Basically, the host OS is the operating system that you're running on the machine, the base on the machine's hardware.
Yeah, on the hardware, right.
Yeah, so you're either running Windows or Linux, and we'll use those two as the easy ones because, say, you're running Linux, but you need to run, you have a couple programs that you want to run in a Windows VM. Well, this program lets you run the guest OS, so your guest OS actually runs on top in a program of the host OS. So make it basically just you have a program that lets you run another operating system.
Right. And to be clear, you can run a virtual machine on a host Windows system or Linux system or BSD or even a Mac. There are plenty of virtual machine software programs that allow you to do that on any platform almost, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We have a couple examples here of some virtual machine software. My favorite is VMware. It's not as it doesn't cost anything, so it's free as in beer, but not free as in freedom because it's proprietary software. But it doesn't cost you anything.
So before we get into some examples, why would I want to use a virtual machine, Bill? You've used a lot of them, and it looks like you're going to be using them more often. So can you give us some reasons why somebody might want to use a virtual machine?
Oh, yeah. If you like to play as much as I do, you want to be able to load up, you can load up a virtual machine with different Linuxes, and you can play with configuration files, you can install programs, you can do anything. And if you mess up the operating system in the virtual machine, you can usually just as one click restore back to a saved state and you're ready to go again.
Right. One way I use a virtual machine is I'm required to run Windows for work. And when I'm at home here running my Linux machine and I'm working from home, rather than fire up a second computer, which would require a second network connection, I just open up Windows in a virtual machine and run it that way.
And does it run? What program do you use for that?
I use VirtualBox.
Oh, okay.
And it runs just fine. I'm running Windows XP, and that's not too much of a challenge for VirtualBox. And my machine has an i5 processor and 4 gigabytes of RAM. So there's a lot of horsepower there that the native OS isn't using under normal conditions.
Well, if you're running, basically, if you're running Linux as the host OS or the base OS, it's not quite as, Windows, XP isn't a real huge memory hog, and Ubuntu, or you're running Mint, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm running Linux Mint 13. Yeah.
So it, even though it's it's a little spiffy version of Ubuntu with some added stuff, it still doesn't use all that power of the hardware. So you have plenty of room to install your guest.
Right, and what we're talking around here is the fact that when you are running a virtual machine or virtual machine software on your computer, you need to have enough RAM and enough hard drive space for your computer essentially to run the two operating systems simultaneously. So you're not going to be doing this on a really old computer.
No.
At least not with the full-featured virtual machine software programs like VirtualBox or VMware.
So what would you say the minimum requirements would be to run a virtual VM software?
Well, it really depends, I found, on which virtual machine software you're using. So maybe we should get into some of the more common VM okay. software and then talk about them a little bit as far as all what right. the requirements are. So there are four of them that will run on Linux that we're going to talk about here. The first one is VirtualBox. Now, this is from Oracle. And prior to Oracle, it was Sun Microsystems. It's been around quite a while. It's free of charge. Oracle does not charge at this point for VirtualBox. And you can run it actually on Linux or Windows or Mac. It'll run on all three, and it runs pretty well. Another one is VMware. That one also is cross-platform on Windows and Linux. According to what I read, it doesn't run on the Mac.
It does not run on Mac.
It is $190, so it's certainly not free. And they actually have a couple of different versions of this. There is a free version called a Viewer, is it?
No, VMware Player.
Player, that's what it is. So that is free, but that doesn't let you define new virtual machines. It just lets you run existing virtual machines.
No.
Is that correct?
No, that's not correct.
Okay, what is correct?
It lets you create and run virtual machines. So say I download an image of Ubuntu, the latest Ubuntu onto my machine. I start up the program. I point the program to the ISO, and it creates a virtual machine. I can go in and customize how much RAM I want to give, how many processors I want to give, just like you would do on VirtualBox. It's a little different interface, but it's the same principle.
Okay.
And it works
great.
Yeah,
I've never used VMware.
Oh, that's my favorite.
So why would I want to pay $190 for the other version?
The other version has what I call more pro features, abilities to do customizations. You can, I'm not sure because I've never run it, but I've heard that it has some additional features that, you know, professionals would want, you know, that goes beyond the basic virtual, you know, virtual OS. Mm-hmm. That you would be running. So I think you can create, and then you can deploy to the cloud and stuff like that. I mean, you can do a lot of stuff. I would say go, if you're interested in it, go look at their website, because they give a big bullet point of everything it does. But I've found that VMware Player works awesome. I haven't had much luck with a virtual box, but I think that's just because I'm stupid. Yeah, it doesn't like the Chief Executive
Minion.
I've
run VirtualBox on Windows and Linux, and I like it a lot, and I've found no reason to switch over. I'd like to try VMware someday, but have never had the need to.
Yeah, well, I tried VirtualBox, and I just had problems with it, and I'm sure it's just because I'm stupid, as I said. But VMware has always worked really nice for me, the VMware Player, and since it's free as in beer, but not free as in freedom, you know, it's a proprietary software.
Yep.
But they don't charge for it, and they haven't ever charged for it that I know of. And what's really nice is it works for me, and I can put a Ubuntu disk in, and it has what they call, easy install. It recognizes Ubuntu. I'll show you how big Ubuntu's gotten. And it says, we can do this to an easy install. So you just enter your name, your password, and it does everything. Sets it all up, and boom, 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 boom. You don't have to touch anything else.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And I'm sure since Mint is based on Ubuntu, it would do the same thing. I think it's an awesome product. I like it a lot, but that's just me. Your mileage may vary.
Yeah. Well, there's another one that's completely cross-platform that runs on Mac, Windows, and Linux. Perhaps you've heard of it. Parallels?
I have heard Parallels.
Yeah, I know you have a Mac. And
yeah.
Parallels is less expensive than VMware. It's only $80 by comparison. It is proprietary software. And I didn't know that it ran on anything but a Mac. I was surprised when I did some research for this that there are actually versions of Parallels for Windows and Linux as well.
I didn't know that. I knew it ran on Mac because the Mac version's called Parallels Fusion. I bought Parallels Fusion 5. I didn't have a lot of luck with it. It worked kind of halfway for me. But then again, remember, I said I'm stupid, so I wasn't impressed with it.
In my research for the podcast, I noticed that on the Parallels website, they do separate the Mac version from the Windows and Linux version. And so I'm suspecting from the way they've got it positioned on the website that there are actually two versions, one for the Mac and the other one that is for Windows and Linux. Mm-hmm. And I'm suspecting, although I didn't do any research into the price because I had no intention of purchasing it, I'm suspecting that if you want to run it on all three platforms, you end up actually paying twice, once for the Mac version, once for Windows, or once for Linux. And I could very easily be wrong because I didn't look into that, quite frankly. And I have a VirtualBox, and that works just fine. So getting back to the question that you asked about the requirements here, all three of those, I would suspect, would need a fairly modern computer. Now, I've run VirtualBox on a dual-core Intel processor, and I'm currently running VirtualBox on an i5 processor. You have an i7, and previous to that, you were running VMware on something less than that, I'm mm-hmm. sure.
A dual-core Intel chip.
Right.
Just I think it was like a 2.14 gigahertz, so I had two cores with 4 gigs of RAM. It ran, but it doesn't. It really, you really notice a difference with more memory and more cores.
Right, and that's one of the key things on virtual machines is after you build them, first of all, you need some space on the hard drive because it does take up some of your hard drive and makes it to the virtual machine look like that is the hard drive, the initial hard drive for that virtual computer. But it takes up space on your physical hard drive to do that. Depending on how you set it up with VirtualBox, you can either have it a fixed amount or you can have it expand as your needs change. So as you add more software, store more data on your virtual machine, it actually dynamically expands the hard drive size. So you can start off with something small and just have it make itself as big as it needs to be to handle what you're doing on there. But the other things that it requires are processor speed and RAM. And what I found, just like with normal hardware, the more RAM you have, the faster your machine works and the better your machine works. And the nice thing about virtual machines is you can adjust the amount of your computer's physical RAM that you can divert to the virtual machine. So if you have 4 gigabytes of RAM, you can easily leave 3 gigabytes for your running machine and 1 gigabyte over to the virtual machine, or split it half and half, or whatever makes sense for what you're doing. As long as you have enough RAM left for your physical machine, things should work just fine. And of course, the more RAM you can dedicate to the VM, the better.
Yeah, and another thing that the virtual machine software will let you do is if you have multiple cores, you can assign extra cores to it. So if you say you have a quad-core machine, you can say, I want to give this VM two of my cores I can access it. So, you know, you got two that's sitting there basically running the base operating system. You have two running your virtual machine, and you can play with it. But I got a question. Your i5, how many cores does that have?
Well, it's hyper-threaded, so it has two cores, but it looks like four.
Yeah.
And so I can dedicate one or two of those cores to a virtual machine, and typically I just split the resources in half, so the physical machine has half and the virtual machine has the other half if I'm running just one VM. If I'm running two VMs, then I may divide it up differently, but I always want to make sure, everyone should always make sure that their physical machine has enough to keep running, because if you don't, then everything crashes.
Yeah. The reason I was asking, because the i7 has four cores with hyper-threading, so it looks like it has eight processors.
Yeah, so you can split that up quite nicely amongst virtual machines without any trouble at all.
So basically, we know that you need memory is important, and cores are important. So if you have a, you can actually run it on a dual core machine just fine. You just have to be, you won't be able to probably run two or three, but you can run one pretty well. But I would say if you're just going to be running VMware or not VMware, but a VM software, that the more RAM the better.
Yes, exactly right.
Yeah.
So some other reasons why you might want to use a virtual machine in addition to testing out different distributions of Linux and running a different operating system for work. Maybe you want to run Linux day-to-day, but you enjoy your Windows games, so you might want to install Windows on a virtual machine and use that for gaming. Although, because you're running it in a virtual machine, there may be some overhead that wouldn't really be conducive to the fastest game. So typically what gamers do is they run Windows as their host operating system and then run their guest operating systems as the other ones that they want to run. And some other reasons you might want to use virtual machines: if you are a software developer and you want to be able to test your software on different platforms, Mac, Windows, Linux, you can have those installed as virtual machines rather than going out and purchasing computers with that operating system just so you can test software. You know, certainly there's some advantages to having the hardware, but it's much, much less expensive and much more productive, I think, to have these things in a virtual machine, because not only can you share your computer's processing power and RAM and hard drive space, you can actually share data between the two operating systems, your native operating system and the guest operating system. If you wish to do that, you can set that up as a shared folder on your hard drive between the two, which, you know, if you're running one version of Windows and another version of Windows, you've got to watch for viruses and things like that crossing between the two. Even though you have Windows in a virtual machine, it's still susceptible to viruses, so you still have to run antivirus software and all those other not so good things over there. And sharing data between your host and guest operating systems, there are plenty of ways to do that with network attached storage and cloud-based storage and other things as well that don't involve setting up a share between the two environments on your physical hardware.
Well, I tell you how I set mine up. I did create a Linux partition on my new machine, but it's not real big. I basically keep it there for when I want to test Linux on bare metal, or basically on the host machine, not running VM. And then when I'm running the running, this one has Windows 7 on it, and I want to work on some scripts, or I want to test stuff, I can start up a virtual machine with Ubuntu in it, or I got one for Linux Mint, and I've got one for Fedora, and I can bring it up, and once you get them set up, you can make what they call a snapshot. I don't know if VirtualBox has that, I don't remember, but you create a snapshot, so if something happens to it, you know, you get it, you get your, if you're running your Linux and you totally mess it up because you were trying out an experiment, you can revert back to this last snapshot, which is nice because you can bring it back right where it was.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you can do the similar sort of thing with VirtualBox. It can be as easy as making a copy of the image file that is your virtual machine and just putting it somewhere else as a backup, if you wish. Different ways of doing it on different virtual machine software, but it's there for most of these.
Do you know what another use of running VM software is?
Tell me.
In the classroom, what they'll do is they will set up, we'll say they're running well, most classrooms are running Windows, and you know, you got kids pounding on it and stuff. Well, they'll actually put a VMware or VirtualBox or whatever, and they'll reinstall Windows on top of that, or Linux or whatever they want to run. So if the kids mess it up, all they did is mess up the VM. They didn't really mess up the host operating system, so they can usually just go back, hit the snapshot, boom, it's back within 30 seconds, and you're good.
Mm-hmm.
So they use it to, you know, because little kids and computers, they like to push buttons and see, well, what does that do, you know? So
yeah,
you can,
in fact, I took some undergraduate computer programming classes, and that particular university had a virtual machine set up where the host operating system was Unix. The guest operating system was Unix. They would create a Unix image on a virtual machine, and at the end of the day, after all of the classes had finished, they would back up the data, in other words, the lessons that the students had created. They would restore the pristine original image and then restore the data, so that regardless of whether or not any of the wise guys in the classroom had tried to hack the system from the inside, they would start over again every day. So and you know, accidental damage to your particular setup would be wiped out, because they would start over the next day, and of course you would have all the work you had done. It's just the base operating system for the classroom, which was in a virtual machine, was there waiting for you, and you knew it was going to work in the morning, no matter how much damage you did the day before.
That's awesome. And you know, like I said, that's how I use mine. I use mine to test, and you know, sometimes it's really nice to know that if you do something stupid, which I am prone to do, and oh, what's this configuration file do? Let's just rewrite it and do something different, and it doesn't start. I realize that I haven't just totally borked my system.
Right, exactly.
10 minutes before we start recording our podcast.
Another use is if you're in the computer support business, as we kind of are, and you're providing support for, let's say, multiple versions of Linux.
Yeah.
You can have multiple VMs, so that if you get a question on something you don't use every day, you can fire up a VM, research it, and provide an answer that makes sense.
Yeah, I've got that set up. I've got Fedora, Ubuntu, and Mint, and I've just finished downloading, how do we say it, Sebion? Or
yeah.
Sebio?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's fun that you can play with different Linux distributions, and the really cool part is you don't have to burn a DVD.
Yeah, exactly.
It saves money.
ISO and install it from there on your virtual machine.
It works great.
If it's a live DVD or live CD, I've actually run the live CD from within a VM to try something out. So that kind of works too.
You said there was four. We've covered three. What's the fourth one?
Well, the fourth one is something called QEMU. Those four letters have been around for quite a long time. And by the way, of course, we'll have links to all of this in the show notes. But QEMU is a Linux-only virtual machine. It's free. And it is particularly lightweight. It, as you might suspect, is not quite so graphical in its setup. I haven't used it for a while, but when I first started playing around with virtual machines, I was using QEMU primarily because it was described as the virtual operating system for Pendrive Linux. And QEMU is particularly good for virtualizing an operating system on a thumb drive, particularly because you do not need to be root to run the virtual machine QEMU, which from the descriptions that I have read, at least about VirtualBox and VMware, you do have to run those two programs as root. So QEMU you can run as a regular user and still be able to virtualize an entire operating system.
Does that I'm not too up on the QEMU, but someone told me that, I remember in passing, that didn't QEMU have to didn't the processor have to have some kind of virtualization built into it?
You know, it's been so long since I've used it. I don't remember any of the details around it. I used it briefly to familiarize myself with virtual machines and how they worked, and found that it worked for me. But then I needed some additional features, and then found VirtualBox and didn't look back. So I really can't answer that question. I never got that deep into it, quite frankly.
Yeah, for our advanced episode, I'll see about doing a little research about QEMU, and so I can answer some of those questions.
So those are the four that run on Linux, and three of those four are cross-platform, completely cross-platform, except for VMware that doesn't run on a Mac, apparently. There are some others that are Windows only. And there's Windows Virtual PC, mm-hmm. which is designed for Windows 7. So that's your host machine. And so that you can run previous versions of Windows on Windows 7. So Virtual PC will run on Windows 7 Pro and Ultimate. And apparently it won't run on any of the lesser versions as well. So it's a very, very restricted it's very, very restricted in terms of what host operating system it'll run on. It is free from Windows, but it is not going to run Windows 8 for you. And it's not going to run on Windows 8 unless they make some changes to it. What they do have, though, that it is much more modern, Windows only, is a Microsoft Azure, A-Z-U-R-E, Azure. And it will run on Windows XP, Windows Vista, Windows Server 2008, and Windows 7. So it is rather limited in that it only runs on Windows host machines, but it will run other guest operating systems like Linux servers and things like that. But it's not cheap. It's a minimum of $500. And what I mean by a minimum is, once you purchase it, you then have a monthly fee that's determined by your usage. So if you have 150 gigabyte SQL database, for example, it's going to cost you $225 a month to run Windows Azure. And if you have two terabytes worth of bandwidth that you're using, so you're in a truly virtual environment here, you're running multiple servers and things like that, it's going to cost you $235 a month. So not for the faint of heart, not for the hobbyist, something that would only be for folks running Windows and wanting to virtualize environments for their enterprise, typically.
So Azure, Windows Azure is basically a server. It's mainly for servers, right?
Well, I think that's what it's intended for. Oh, okay. You can run, from your server 2008 server, you can virtualize Windows desktops. Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to run lower powered computers on your employees' desktops, and you wanted them to be in a quote safe environment, and you wanted to have them run a virtual version of their operating system, you could do that, and it could be a desktop operating system that would be the guest. And the advantages there, of course, are that if something goes wrong with a particular employee's operating system, it's in a virtual environment. It's much easier to redeploy rather than have to rebuild their machine from scratch if something goes wrong, like viruses, spyware, and other things.
Well, I've noticed that this seems to be a growing area of interest with companies. I know VMware has come out with a bunch of different services that are very Azure, Windows Azure-like. And so you've got some big heavyweight players in there trying to get people to use their virtualization software.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've talked about virtual machines on Windows, virtual machines on Linux, and a little bit about virtual machines on the Mac. The one that stands out that's a full-featured virtual machine that doesn't apparently run on a Mac is VMware, but on a Mac as the host operating system is VMware, but certainly VirtualBox and Parallels do. What is this boot camp thing, Bill? Is that a virtual machine, really?
No.
It's not. So what is it?
Boot camp is if you're going to be running Windows 7 or XP on your Mac, it basically creates the program takes and partitions your drive with, say you want to split your drive half Mac and half Windows. So it will partition and create the necessary boot up menu, because you hold down, I think it's the controller option. I think it's option. And when it boots up, and then you can pick which one you want to go into, your Windows or you want to go into your Mac. So they're totally separate. They're running on base hardware.
Okay, so it's for creating a dual boot.
Yeah, it's creating for dual boot. Yeah, because Apple controls their hardware, and so some people have complained about this. They only have approved drivers, and some people say that the drivers aren't the most up to date or anything because they're using older drivers. I don't know if that's really true or not, because I don't run boot camp, but I know someone that does. And once you install the Windows system, you have to put Snow Leopard or Lion or whatever you happen to be running, and it installs a program that installs the drivers, because there's certain things that will not work until you get the Windows drivers from Apple. That's kind of weird, but hey.
Right. Okay. So, do they charge for boot camp?
No, that boot camp. When you buy the Mac, it's built in.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So, because I was going to ask, why wouldn't you just, if you want to install Linux, why wouldn't you just, use something like Refit, R-E-F-I-T, that gets around the EFI boot for the Mac, and then just install Linux as you normally would, and let the Linux installer partition the hard drive. Is that a possibility? I think heard Nightwise describe it that way.
Yeah, I've actually run Ubuntu and Pingai OS, which is a Linux that has that we've talked about before. It has everything but the kitchen sink in it on my Mac, and basically I used a boot. I did it two ways. I've used Boot Camp, and then just instead of putting a Windows disk in, I put my Linux disk in, and it installed just fine. And I've had the Linux disk actually partition a drive and install, and it worked. It had a few little glitches, but I think Ubuntu has been working on that UEFI boot, so I don't know all the magic it does under the hood.
Okay. All right. Well, moving along then, one of the things that we want to take a look at now is, how do I install a virtual machine? Well, the first thing you have to do, of course, is to go out and get it. So if it's one of the ones you have to buy, you go and you make your purchase or you download it. You can download a free trial of some of the ones that are for fee. And, of course, the free ones, you just go and download them from Linux. You can install them from the Linux repository if your particular VM is available for you, and certainly VirtualBox is in most of the repositories out there. Then you install it on your host operating system. So you would install it as you normally would any other software application. The next thing you want to do is make sure that you read up on how to use the one you chose, because each one is different. They have similar features for the most part, but the way you enable them, the way you put it all together is different. But essentially, the main steps are: create a virtual hard drive, install your guest operating system on their virtual hard drive, and for some of these, you may have to install add-ons, like VirtualBox has extensions that you'll want if you want to do things like make use of your computer's hardware, CD-ROM drive, or a USB port, or other things as well. This enables you to do.
I got a question on VirtualBox. I heard there's two versions. The one in their repos is called the Open Source Edition, OSE. And I heard that that's the one you have to download a bunch of extensions to get the USBs to work. But I also heard that you could go to VirtualBox's website and download the one that's not the Open Source Edition. It's still free, but it already has all that enabled. Is that true?
Since Oracle purchased VirtualBox, things have changed. So they're when it was under Sun Microsystems, they had two versions. The open source version, which if you wanted it to work the way most people wanted to work, you had to go out and get something called Guest Editions, which enabled everything to work properly. And then they had the proprietary version, which had all of that stuff running by default. Okay. So it kept the free as in freedom people happy, as well as give the people who are more pragmatic the ability to go out and use the proprietary version directly from Sun Microsystems. Since Oracle purchased them, they've changed that guest editions thing to something they call extensions. And the version that's labeled in the repositories as open source edition is essentially the full feature version. Points over to the standard version that's on the Oracle website and downloads that, the same one you would get from their website. And you simply install the extensions if you want to make use of those features. But if you don't need those features, if you're just testing, virus or antivirus software, you're an antivirus software developer, maybe you don't need those additional features. Or if you're just testing out an operating system to see if you like it, certainly you may not need those. But if it's an operating system, a virtual operating system that you're going to be using day to day or even on some sort of semi-regular basis, you're probably going to want to enable some of the features that the extensions will give you. So you just install the extensions as well. And what I've found, at least on Linux Mint, the extensions are available in the repositories as well. So there's really no need to go to the Oracle website to get this stuff.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
Mint does a nice job. So after we get this and we install it, what should we expect?
So it's really like a blank hard drive. You just start up your virtual machine, you create a blank hard drive, and at least on VirtualBox, the key combination to boot into the installation is F12, which kind of mimics what a Windows machine would do. Sometimes the key combination is different depending on your computer manufacturer, but F12 seems to be fairly common on even hardware. So it's just like that. You press F12 and it gives you a boot choice. You can boot from the hard drive, which of course at this point doesn't have anything on it. You can boot from a CD, or you can boot from something else. I forget what the other thing is, but you wanted to boot from the CD image. And I left out a step, actually. When you start the virtual machine for the very first time, at least in VirtualBox, the one that I'm familiar with, you can set up some options, some configuration, some preferences for that virtual machine. So one of the things you want to set up before you launch it is ensure that you've specified that there is a CD-ROM drive, and that will be a virtual CD-ROM drive. And you can say, put the CD in that drive. And the way you do that is on the user interface, you just indicate that you want the image file inserted into the drive as though it were a CD. So you don't actually have to produce a CD. You just say, okay, I've got a CD-ROM drive on this virtual machine, and I want to put this ISO file in there as though it were a CD. And now when you boot up and press F12, it gives you the option to boot from that CD, and then you install it as you would normally on regular hardware. So it's actually very, very easy.
Yeah, the VMware is very similar. You go in and you tell it you want to create a new virtual machine, and it'll ask you, you know, do you want to install it from the hard drive or from the CD-ROM or an image? You select the image because, you know, I don't need to burn to install it, which is nice. That saves me a step and a blank DVD. And I point it toward there, and it does the rest. And it, you know, sometimes it even says, hey, I recognize this, and this is what I recommend. Does VirtualBox give you recommended settings?
Yeah, in fact, there's some default settings, and many of them are just kind of a slider, and they have kind of a green zone and a red zone, and if you put it into the red zone, you may be using up too much of your hardware resources and that sort of stuff. But it comes up with a minimal configuration that is kind of the recommended settings.
Oh, okay. Yeah, basically, it tells you it doesn't want you to, you know, you have 4 gigabytes of RAM. You don't want to give all 4 to the...
Yes, exactly. And so where that dividing line between the green zone and the red zone is depends on how much hardware resource you actually have. Mm-hmm. So depending on which hardware you've got this installed on, the amount that it will say is good or bad will depend on how much your actual hardware has.
Yeah. So I went ahead and installed the VMware. I've installed my operating system on top of it. It's ready to go. What features should I expect? Well, you know, what am I going to expect after all that?
Yeah, so of course you can run the guest operating system in a window. So you can run, let's say your host operating system is, Ubuntu, and you're running Linux Mint. You're trying out Linux Mint. So mm-hmm. you can run Linux Mint in a window, so it doesn't take up your entire screen, but it is full screen within the window. Or you can run it full screen, so it takes up your entire monitor's screen. And in that case, if you didn't know you were in a virtual machine, there may be some indicators on screen that tell you that you're in a virtual machine. But if you hide those, it will look like your computer is running that particular guest operating system. So on VirtualBox, when you're running an operating system in full, a guest operating system in full screen mode, you can put the controls on the top of the screen or on the bottom of the screen, and you can have them hide automatically so that there's a little, like 1 or 2 pixel line at the edge of the screen that you hover over, and it pops up the controls so that you can go back to other settings. And of course, there are some key combinations that let you switch between full screen and windowed and other settings as well. I'm assuming that it's something similar on VMware.
It's very similar. It's, I've always left it at the top. I don't know if you can move it. But yeah, once you go to full screen, you tell it to hide, and there's just this little line that if you didn't know it was there, wouldn't have.
Right, and pops out. The nice thing about having it able to move up or down, it depends on where your menu bar is, you know. So if it's traditional Windows XP, your menus and your taskbar is at the bottom, so the controls at the top make sense. If it's classic GNOME, Ubuntu or something, you know, you've got the menu bar at the top. You probably want to have the little pop-up controls at the bottom, so that you don't end up moving your mouse up to click the menu icon, and you accidentally hover over, and now your VM controls are over top of your menu. So
that might not be
good. It's nice being able to move them around. So we've talked about those two different modes. There's a Windows mode and a full screen mode. You can also have in VirtualBox something called scaled mode. So it's very similar to a windowed mode, except that in windowed mode, you have a specific screen resolution, and that's the size of the window. If you've got, for example, on your host operating system, you've got an HD display, you know, the traditional 16:9 display that's 1920 by 1080. let's say you've got this hooked up through an HDMI to an HD television or something. Lots of screen real estate there. So if you have, if you're running a guest operating system that's, another 16 by 9, but it's 1366 by 768. That could easily be in the window, in a fixed resolution window. And if you wanted to change the resolution, you could do that, but it would snap to the new window resolution. Now, scaled mode, what that does is it allows you to open the operating system in a window. You open your guest operating system in a window and then control the size of the window by dragging the edge of the window as you normally would. So as you change the size of the window, the screen resolution is automatically adjusted by the virtual machine to match the physical dimensions of the window that you have the virtual machine running in, which can get you into some odd dimensions, but it'll work. So I'm not sure, other than having the window the right size so you can see it, I'm not sure what really the big deal about that is. It does make it easier to make your screen smaller for doing screencasts and things like that. So you can do a screenshot of a virtual machine screen where what you're trying to demonstrate is on the virtual machine. That's another use for VM, is to do screencasts on stuff. And then the last mode, at least the last mode for VirtualBox, is something called Seamless. And what that allows you to do is, if you are, for example, in Ubuntu or Linux Mint or Fedora or something like that, running VirtualBox, and you have Windows XP, let's say, as your virtual operating system. If you run in Seamless mode, you will see, as you launch the Windows applications, they will come up as a Windows window on your Fedora desktop. So you could be running, let's say, Firefox on Fedora that would show up with the Fedora window decorations. And you could be running Firefox on Windows XP, and the window decorations on that window would be the traditional Windows XP, you know, with the light blue, the Lego blue window border with, you know, the big red X and in the upper right corner. So you can actually run multiple operating systems windows as though they were native on your computer. And the nice thing about the old style GNOME interface was that you could have your native Linux host operating system panel at the top. You could have Windows XP running in Seamless mode with its taskbar at the bottom. And so if you wanted to launch a Windows application, you would go to the bottom. If you wanted to run a Linux application, you would go to the top, and the window would appear with the appropriate window decoration so you can tell which one is which, and use them as though you were just using a single operating system. Very, very slick.
Very cool. Very cool. So does VirtualBox, I know VMware does, but does VirtualBox let you create something called like shared folders and stuff like that with?
Yep. So you can have shared folders. You can do copy and paste across the two virtual machines. So you can copy text from something on your Linux desktop and copy it over through the virtual machine interface over to another application on the guest operating system application that's running. You can share your computer's hardware, CD drive or hard drive, and lots of other things you can share between the two.
Well, you know, I just thought of another use for, you know, all these features. Say that you work in a business, and they have, you know, businesses buy the same computer model, you know, they buy 30 of them,
mm-hmm.
and you have 30 different people working on a project, but you want them to all make sure they all have the same, they're working on the same thing. You could actually make the VM image, and I know with VMware you can, and you can share it to the others. So you can say, here's the VM, here, we'll put this in your VMware player, put this in your VM, and everybody has the same exact programs and everything. It's and so they can all, they're working from the same page. Does does VirtualBox allow you to share your VM images with other people?
Sure. It's just a file.
Okay.
And so if you've got a 20 gig hard drive, and it's a virtual hard drive, and it's 50% full, your image will be 10 gigabytes. So it's a big file, but you can copy that file and give it to someone else, and it will run in another virtual box just as it would, or just as it does on your machine.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is really awesome. Okay.
Makes it easy for backups too.
Yeah, it does, because you could always, once you get it, say you're going to be testing software out on a Linux system, you can, once you get your Linux system set up in your VM, where you just copy that file to an external hard drive or whatever, just to keep it safe.
And yeah, exactly. So, one word of caution, though, with these virtual images, image drives, a lot of folks will have, let's say, a network-attached storage device formatted FAT32, just so that it's compatible with older Windows machines that might be on the network, and Macs can see that format as well as Linux. But it has a file size limitation of 2 gigabytes. So if your virtual machine is more than 2 gigabytes, you won't be able to save it as a file, as a single file on that backup drive. So just be aware of that.
Yeah. To get around that, you can format, if you're running a Windows machine and you want to share it with a Linux machine, NTFS.
Yeah, that works fine.
Yeah, that works fine, and it allows files bigger than the FAT32.
Right.
It's really funny. You have to download a program to get the Mac to see NTFS, but Linux sees it automatically, can read and write to it, which I think is just hilarious.
Yeah, some earlier versions of Linux, you did need to download, I think it was NTFS 3G or something like that.
Yeah.
There was some extension that you had to add, but yeah, these days that's already built in, and you just works.
We just love the just works part.
Yeah, exactly. We love that. So a couple other things to wrap up on. If you want to test out any of these virtual machines, we'll have links to the Oracle VirtualBox website. Although you really, if you're running Linux, you don't need to go there. Just go into your repositories. It's most likely that you can install it from there. We'll have a link to VMware if you want to use their free player, or if you want to fork over $190 to get their more full-featured version. We'll have a link to Parallels, which, who knew, it runs on Windows and Linux as well as Mac for $80. We'll also include links to Microsoft's Azure and the Windows Virtual PC virtual machine software, and to QEMU, although again, that's something that would be available in your repositories for most Linux distributions.
Yeah, and if you have had some good experiences with virtual machines, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, absolutely. And so in our advanced episode for using virtual machines, Bill, we're going to rely on you as the VMware expert to give us some tips from the trenches on using VMware and using virtual machines. And I'm sure between now and then, you're going to be playing around on your brand new hardware, installing a few virtual machines. I just know you.
Well, okay. Since you twisted my arm, I guess I can do that. No, I look forward to that. I've already got a few tips that I'm gonna save them for the advanced episode. As I guess we'll use that as a teaser. Come back and
okay. So, Bill, thanks very much for another wonderful episode. Really sorry that Tom couldn't be here. I know he really hasn't used virtual machines much at all, if at all, and we were going to be relying on him to ask some of the questions that newbies who haven't used it would be asking. So hopefully between the two of us, we've covered some of those, enough of those so that those people unfamiliar with virtual machines will have gotten something out of this episode as well.
Well, just remember now, if I'm going to be the VMware expert in quotation marks, you have to be the VirtualBox expert.
Okay, fair enough. I don't know how much of an expert I am, but I'm an experienced user, let's put it that way. Yeah.
Okay, so what's our next episode?
Our next episode is listener feedback.
Yes.
Until then, you can go to the articles and show notes at goinglinux.com for more information, detailed instructions, screencasts, and illustrations. You can email us with comments, questions, and suggestions.
And remember, if you have a topic you want us to cover on the show, use our forums to leave your topic suggestion in the thread labeled Topic Suggestions, and that's at forums.goinglinux.com.
You can also send us an audio comment by email. We'll play it on the show. Our email address is goinglinux@gmail.com. And our voicemail is 1-904-468-7889.
Follow our show updates at Going Linux on Twitter or follow Larry on Google+.
You can download the episodes from our website or you can play them right on the show notes page. Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.